I am a grateful believer in recovery for drugs, alcohol, and my name is Kyle.
Hi, Kyle.
Hello, everyone. I was born in Everett, Washington, to a mother and a father who loved each other very much, and I feel lucky for that. I also had four sisters, three older and one younger. We were LDS, or Mormon, and we went to church every Sunday. It was 3 hours long. I hated every second of it, and I mean every second. Not to mention I was missing football on TV. My parents were very devout, meaning they didn't drink, smoke, or do drugs. They didn't even drink coffee or consume caffeine. They wouldn't let us watch rated R movies and wouldn't let us watch much TV at all. They reinforced that drinking was bad, so I thought only bad people drank. As long as I can remember, I fell in love with sports. It was football, basketball, and sometimes baseball that I would either be playing in the yard, watching a game or highlights, playing a sports video game, drawing my favorite athletes, or collecting cards of that sport. And if a person didn't like sports, I literally thought, man, what is wrong with that person? Or that person's an idiot. How could you not love sports? At a young age, I was very athletic and gifted at sports. That became my identity. I was an athlete. I knew I was good, and everyone else saw that too. So that's how life went from grade school on. I participated and excelled in sports, basketball, baseball, and track. I couldn't wait, however, to play the one that mattered most, football. My dad wouldn't let me play until the ninth grade, and I was so jealous of the other kids who got to play when they were young. I joined the team as a freshman and stood out immediately. My freshman year, I was a one-man show. I had arrived. I started practicing with the varsity team my freshman year, getting all kinds of love from the coaches. That success reinforced my identity. Now I was a football player. I continued to excel in sports throughout high school. That is how I expressed myself. I was I had all league honors as a sophomore and junior, and right before my senior year, I was touted as one of the best players in the state of Washington in the Seattle Times. 2 weeks before my senior season, where I was supposed to be the biggest thing to ever come through my high school, dominate the season, get a full ride scholarship to a good school, I broke my ankle playing a game of pickup basketball. It was a weird break, and the doctor misdiagnosed it. I had to sit out most of the season, missed basketball and track as well. The calls from the coaches around the country stopped coming, and the full-ride scholarship offers never came. I just kind of fell off the map. That part of my life was so disappointing and embarrassing, I am still dealing with it on some level today. After my senior year, I saw another doctor who found a break in my ankle, gave me surgery, and then I walked on at a local college team, Western Washington University. There I started football camp late. I was an outsider on the team. For that reason, I became depressed and started drinking a lot, missing a lot of team functions, got in a fight with the coach, and ended up transferring schools. My dad told me to check out a college in Eastern Oregon, so I did. I went there to visit. It was a nice day. I saw a few cute girls and some guys who looked about 10 years behind the times. I thought to myself, man, I'm going to own this place. I recently got into the hard partying and womanizing, and that's what I live for, and football made it easy. I moved to La Grande, Oregon, where I started playing football at Eastern Oregon University. While I excelled on the field, I wasn't used to living in a small town with nothing around it, so I developed a pretty hardcore marijuana habit to fight the boredom. I almost got kicked off the team multiple times each year for being high in practice and at meetings. Now, a ways from home, I could be anyone I wanted to be, so I decided to be a cocky, arrogant, selfish jerk. No joke, I literally decided to be that way, the opposite of everything I was raised to be. I became a womanizing, selfish, lazy, cheating, arrogant person who thought I was better than everybody just because I could catch a football. I was stoned every second of every day, bong hits even before breakfast. I would also drink a lot through the week as well. I was no longer even looking forward to playing the games. I was looking forward to the after party where I could get wasted and hopefully do something crazy to impress my friends and then find a female for the night. This is when I first realized I had a real problem. The only thing I had ever cared for, football, now took a backseat to getting high and drunk. I started to hate myself for who I had become. Right before my senior year, I sobered up, got focused, and came into the season in shape and ready to go. I went 6 weeks with no weed or alcohol right before the season. I started out killing it in the first two games. My coaches had made me the focal point of the offense, and it was time for me to explode. The third game of the year with my favorite team's scouts, my favorite NFL team scouts in the stands, the Miami Dolphins, I got tackled and dislocated my shoulder. I was now out for a minimum of 6 weeks. Here came the depression and the drug use again and drinking to deal with it. It stayed that way for good. When I was able to come back and play later in the year, I even started getting stoned before games. I still managed to have a good season, but not a great one. At the end of my senior year, I was contacted by an agent who told me he was going to get me to the pros. I was invited to a professional tryout. Since I hadn't worked out except for the 6 weeks before each year during the summer, I thought maybe I should work out. I went to the weight room one day, just going through the motions. I really couldn't wait to get back home to my house and get stoned. I didn't stretch, I didn't warm up, I didn't do anything like that. I took a huge amount of weight, did a power lift, and destroyed my lower back. I knew my career was over that day when that happened. I knew how bad it was. Rushing through a workout so I could hurry up and get stoned, I hated myself even more now. But I wasn't ready to give up my identity as a football player, so I talked the talk for another few months, putting the combine on hold and claiming I would go to a different one later on in the year. I moved back home, embarrassed and ashamed of myself, yet another big letdown. I had let myself down, I had let my teammates down, my coaches, my friends from my hometown, and my friends from college, my parents, everyone who thought I was going to make it big. I was now not only depressed, I began to think about suicide. I decided to attend graduate school at Eastern Washington University since football was put on hold, or actually done. I again jumped back into the drug use and drinking like I had never left it. It was a bigger school with better parties and more women. While there, I was in a bad accident where I messed up my back even worse and both shoulders very badly. Alcohol and drugs were directly involved. I was now pretty much crippled and couldn't function without numbing the physical pain with alcohol and pills. It was wine, weed, and Vicodin most of the time. I ended up getting a driving under the influence and a possession charge. One weekend, my dad came to visit me, and he saw how his son could barely function because of the physical pain, so he suggested I move back home to start to pursue a solution to my physical problems. So that's what I did. I went back home. I started seeing doctors and had multiple surgeries for the next 6 years. While at home, my driver's license was suspended for a year because of the DUI, and I was sentenced to outpatient treatment for 6 months. I also had to fly back to Spokane to spend a brief stint in the local correctional facility. While in treatment, I literally sat around for 6 months just waiting to be able to get stoned. Thoughts of suicide continued. I had numerous surgeries back home, and I got to the point where it allowed me to somewhat live a semi-normal life where I could finally get a job. I got a job at a local alternative high school working with youth as a counselor slash teacher. However, the choices I made there, being so sick in the head, were horrible, and it eventually ended up in me getting fired. Luckily, I didn't go to prison. Shortly after that, I got fired from a group home working with developmentally disabled adults for letting one of them smoke weed. I had absolutely no boundaries. While back home, I had found all the local drug hookups. Now I was drinking, taking benzos, smoking cocaine, smoking OxyContin, and of course, still smoking weed. I bounced around from house to house during this time, and my addictions continually got worse. I was out of my mind. I was still getting surgery after surgery, and just when things couldn't get any worse, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. The doctor told him it was too advanced for them to do anything except for control the pain. My dad had followed a naturopath doctor for many years out of Mexico who claimed she could cure cancer. Being desperate, we moved down to Rosarita, Mexico, right outside Tijuana, which was where the cancer clinic was. I acted as his caretaker and he went through treatment. Every Tuesday and Thursday, we went to the clinic, which was in the town square. I would pay one of the locals to get me a mixed bag of pills, grab a pint of vodka, and get wasted daily. Almost every single day, by the end of the day, I was completely out of my mind, drunk and high. I usually ended up on the beach, falling down in the mud and sand, crying my eyes out, watching my dad wither away. I eventually had to leave Mexico because I had gotten into trouble, and if I would have stayed, I would have ended up dead. I ended up going back home with a bunch of Valium. I smuggled out of Mexico the night before Thanksgiving. My friends went out, taking a bunch of Valium and alcohol. I fell down over 100 times, one of my friends estimated that night. At some point, I punctured my liver from one of the falls and was bleeding internally. The doctor estimated if I would have laid there any longer, I would have died for sure. I spent 6 days in the ICU. I joke still to this day, that was the best 6 days of my life because the nurse would always give me an extra shot of Dilaudid for the pain so I could be what she called extra comfortable. They sent me home with a bottle of 100 Percocet, I thought I had hit the jackpot. I was so sick in the head. My dad came home a few months later, still sick and getting worse. I was working for him doing a project while he basically stuck to his own home cancer regimen. He got worse and worse. I would go to the house telling myself he was going to die soon and that I needed to hang out with him, but I hardly ever stayed over a few minutes. I would leave yelling and crying in the car. I just could not take the sadness. My disease continued to progress. I was soon stealing some of my dad's oxycodone as he lay in the bed a few feet away. It is amazing what this disease will do to someone. During this time, I still needed physical help. I needed more surgeries. For this reason and the fact that my dad didn't have any more work for me, I decided to move to Portland for a job that had health insurance. My dad backed my decision because he said there was nothing I could do for him there anymore. He wanted his son to go get better. The plan was for me to return in 2 weeks and pick up the rest of my stuff. I moved my stuff to Portland, cheated a drug test, and started a job a few days later. 1 hour into my new job, I got a voicemail from my sister. She was crying into the phone and screaming, "They are both gone." My mother had violently killed my father and then took her own life. I already had been suicidal for years, and then this. At this point in my life, after all that had happened, I did not believe happiness existed. I did not believe it existed for anyone on the face of the earth. Let me repeat that. I did not believe happiness existed in this world. I distinctly remember seeing a mother, a father, and two children eating ice cream on the Portland waterfront with big smiles. I remember looking at them and thinking, wow, they're doing a really good job of faking it. I did not want to live any longer. I spent many nights holding my gun, dreaming about suicide. I also used to leave my front door unlocked at night, hoping someone would break in so I had an excuse to kill them. I was so mad at the world. I was starting to get to a dark place. That was a joke. I was already in a pretty dark place. I would seek out situations that were incredibly dangerous all the time. I would be in crack houses calling people racist names when it was just me and 20 people of a different skin color. I would be downtown at Portland at 4 a.m. by the train station doing the same thing. I can remember driving back from Seattle, waking up in between the two freeways on I-5 in the grass, going 90 miles per hour because I had fallen asleep at the wheel, popping Xanaxes like they were candy. I can't even count the number of times I fell asleep at the wheel using heroin. I lost job after job, failing drug tests or coming to work wasted. In 2010, I couldn't find work for a long time. I went to a pain management clinic, which I did need. However, manipulated the doctor into giving me about $8,000 worth of street value oxycodone and OxyContin. I would sell half the prescriptions and take the rest. Shortly after that, I was smoking crack and heroin every single day, all day. I moved on to shooting up heroin. I ended up in the ICU again, this time with a blood infection. While there, withdrawing from heroin, I asked the doctor if I was going to be okay. He said, "When you're dealing with your blood, you're dealing with your heart. We don't know if you're going to be okay. We need you to be strong." At that exact moment, I realized, wow, maybe I don't want to die. I had been given a wake-up call. I thought I wanted death, but I was wrong. At this time, I started pouring my heart out to God. I wanted all this to stop. He started directing me and has been at my side since that point forward. I would come into situations where I have interactions with people who I knew were sent from God. I was still very sick and struggling, yet I was trying, and he sensed that, and he started guiding me. I wanted to get better, I just didn't know how. I got another job and was doing well. I would always do better for a while, just consuming like pot brownies, which was basically sobriety to me, and staying away from all the hard stuff the best I could. My mouth was still a loose cannon, and I soon got fired from that job for making an inappropriate joke. Even though I was doing my best to behave, I would still break down and go off the deep end every so often. Every couple of weeks, I would start drinking and end up going crazy, always ending up in some dangerous situation or something bad happening. I remember sitting in a car on Sunday morning, crying, wondering to myself why I made these stupid decisions. At that moment, it occurred to me that this is who I was. I was crazy. That every couple of weeks, after doing okay for a bit, I would go on a bender out of boredom or whatever, and I would roll the dice on whether or not I would make it through that weekend alive. I couldn't help it. That is who I was. I was crazy. That was that. I accepted it that morning. I guess right then you could say I realized I was powerless. I didn't know there was a solution. A solution wasn't possible. It was going to be like this until I died, which would probably be very soon, I thought. A couple of hours later that day, I was walking through the alley up to my house, and my neighbor from above said hello. They asked what I was doing. I made a joke about how I was going to see the damage I did to my bank account last night. They laughed, saying they had been there, and asked if I had been to a recovery meeting. I said, no. They suggested we go right then. They took me to an NA meeting. I knew immediately I belonged there. I started attending meetings regularly. I wish I could say I was struck sober at the first meeting, but that has not been my path. I asked one of the guys to be my sponsor. At first, I could only string together a few days to a week and relapse constantly. For about 2 years, I would go days or weeks at a time, then relapse, usually days. But I improved enough to get a job and hold down a job. I even though I was relapsing sometimes while at this job, I was a model employee using a lot of the principles I was learning from AA and NA. I even started to be a decent person most of the time. The job had a lot of downtime so I could work on my recovery. I improved as a person big time, but still had a long ways to go. I felt God starting to work in my life even more during that time, the year and a half that I was at that job. I had my best string of sobriety, 7 months, and God led me to a new job near a car dealership near my house. I took a job at the Toyota dealership selling cars. I immediately fell in love with it. It became my new addiction, and I had found something I was good at. I was getting respect and recognition for the first time in my life since sports. It felt very, very good. I also was making good money, which was a plus. After starting that job, I remained sober for a few more months in 2014. I was sober, however, I had so many other character defects that I wasn't really aware of. I was arrogant, manipulative, dishonest, judgmental, etc. However, the car dealership was the perfect place to be that way, so it was okay. You guys got that one. Good. God continued to bless me during this time. I even got physically healthy enough to work out, which was big for me. I continued to be part of AA and NA for a long stretch, going a few weeks or months, then relapsing over and over. But I was progressing as a person during this time slowly. Progress, not perfection, right? Amen. While in the AA program, I decided to wipe the slate clean with the higher power thing. I told myself, there is a higher power, I'm just not sure who or what it was. In my mind, that enabled me to still try to be sober, but you know, lust and porn was still okay, amongst other things. Most people in AA talked about that openly, like it was okay. So as I got fit, I got cocky, and that was my new life, chasing women most of the time sober, going to strip clubs, porn, using women, etc. I did, however, want to meet the one. One day, I went to the doctor for my foot, and he referred me to a shoe store. I did not want to go and almost didn't. I'm glad I did because there, when I least expected it, I met my future wife. We started dating, and it was great to be with someone who accepted me for who I was. It's pretty crazy, and she was a little crazy herself, so it was good. During the first part of our relationship, I was still relapsing and almost ruined our relationship a few different times. I came clean to her one day about being a real addict. I let her know that if I didn't stay sober, we didn't have a chance. Since then, she has supported my recovery 100%, and I thank her for that. We also started going to church together and made a commitment to put God first. If we hadn't done that, we would not have made it. It got so much better after that. My life was pretty good now, but I still continued to relapse now and then. And when I did, I started to hate myself. And I noticed I started to hate myself and took it out on others around me. I would clean it up right before something was about to fall apart, my relationship, job, whatever. I would clean it up right before I tore it all down. Almost 3 years ago, the same friend who invited me to my first AA meeting invited me to a CR step study here at Rolling Hills. Our friend's right here sitting in the crowd, so got a lot of love for him and gratitude for him doing that. He told me if I was going to do it, I had to commit. I was reluctant at first, but eventually I committed. I relapsed for a few months during that step study weekly. I always told on myself, but it got pretty embarrassing. Finally, I began to take it seriously, and many times, just the thought of having to come back and tell the group kept me sober for that week. I realized that if I was going to stay sober, I had to give it all up. So I found myself a sponsor who was just as messed up as me at one time. Started taking suggestions from him, even when I didn't want to. I started to reach out to newcomers here on Wednesday nights. I spoke my truths in the CR group meetings, and my sponsor took me through the steps pretty quickly, seriously, thoroughly, and quickly. I made a habit out of attending at least one meeting a week, even when I didn't want to. I was still dealing with some serious health issues and suffered two failed surgeries and have had failed two surgeries while in CR. This was always an excuse for me to relapse along the way, every single time. At this time, I was up to over 45 major reconstructive surgeries in my life. I was very fragile and depressed after my two failed surgeries, but my sponsor was great, never judging me, and he would listen when he needed to. He kept me in the moment when I was heading off the deep end by continuing to tell me, "You are okay right now." He suggested a book, Battlefield of the Mind by Joyce Myers, which really helped a lot. Being so fragile in sobriety during this time, I started telling on myself immediately after I had done something wrong so the shame didn't build up. It was important not to let the little things build up into a big ball of shame. James 5:16, "Therefore, confess your sins to each other and pray for each other so that you may be healed. The prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective." I also started righting my wrongs, cleaning my side of the street. All were great tools to keep me sober. After starting CR and starting to take not only my recovery seriously, but also starting to pursue a relationship with Jesus Christ, I have been blessed with many things. I now am married to my best friend and the love of my life, who accepts me for who I am, which I admit is very difficult. She supports me and believes in me and gives me a reason to stay on the right path, even when I have a case of the efforts. I love her so much, and I am so lucky. God has also blessed me since being in CR with a higher paying job while working about half the time. Also, a literal miracle has happened to me. I can be around someone who is drinking or smoking pot, and I'm not even tempted to use it all. For the last 9 years, anytime I was around anyone using any substance, I would be in my head fighting with myself whether to use or not, thinking about nothing else. It was torture. The obsession has been lifted. It is not there anymore. It is truly a miracle, and I can't even describe how that happened. Thank you. Thank you. Today, to maintain my sobriety, I use many spiritual tools that I learned in CR and AA. I wake up and usually find the time to pray, read the Bible, or some other uplifting book, and meditate. I constantly remind myself that I have a very blessed life. I remind myself constantly to stay humble and concentrate on the good things in my life rather than dwell on the bad. There is a few things that I would change about my life, but for now, I am trying to put Proverbs 3:5-6 in play. Trust in the Lord with all our heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all ways, submit to him and he will make your path straight. I just trust that the Lord will bless me as I grow as a person and become closer to him. This is much easier said than done, but I do it the best I can. Recovery, specifically CR, has given me the tools, the fellowship, and the accountability to grow as a person in God, and somehow, some way, lifted the obsession to use drugs and alcohol from me. And God can do the same for you, or if you have any other issue you're dealing with. And the one person who can direct you on that path to recovery may be sitting right beside you right now. And if they aren't tonight, they will be soon. So keep coming back. Thank you.